theme for the week is Southern Struggle, a celebration of Southern Struggle. And I wanted to tell you a little bit about a festival that's been going on in these parts for the past 7 or 8 years to celebrate a struggle against the United States Army Corps of Engineers. You've no doubt heard of them before and know what line of work they're in. And this community called Skin Creek has been holding a festival early in October to celebrate their own resistance to the Corps in the building of a dam which will displace 1,800 people. And one of the most untouched rural sections of the state. Where land is, or I should say was, privately owned up until quite recently. Large farms that have been handed down through families. Perhaps as large a section of privately owned parcels as you could find anywhere left in the country that aren't owned by some major corporation. Or most of the land here in Randolph County is owned by the Forest Service. We don't derive any taxes from that here. We derive other benefits. They let us cut firewood there if we go and get a permit. And they have run, I believe, some very useful programs the Forest Service has. But this sense all around us, this expanding economy, not to us, we're living in depression here. West Virginia ranks first in the nation in unemployment today. And but the economy for some people is expanding. And companies are buying companies and conglomerates are buying and selling conglomerates. You know how mind-boggling it is when you're faced with a situation and you start trying to find out who you deal with. Well, in this case, the Corps of Engineers had at its disposal the entire system of this country. And laws were changed to allow the project to proceed. Thugs were hired to intimidate people at public meetings. Thugs were hired in the community to intimidate people by contractors building roads, and it's really unbelievable that a thing like that could happen in this country. And right after the festival last fall, a widow woman and her adult dependent son were evicted from their home in handcuffs and chains by 3 United States Marshals. And I wanted to play you a radio piece that I put together. It's not a documentary in the usual sense because I'm not an investigative reporter. My area's interest is in culture and in folklore, and my interest here is in the culture of this particular struggle to see how people who are going through it feel about it, what they believe, how their beliefs are altered by this difficulty they're having. Because that's really what the folklore of West Virginia is about. It's about upheaval, because that's what's going on right now. And at every level, all around us. So I played this segment the other day, but at the risk of boring some of you, I want to play just the first 10 minutes of it. I collected 34 hours of tape for this program over a period of about 2.5 months. And in that time, I talked to the widow woman and her son. I I talked to somebody from the Corps of Engineers, their chief of public relations from the Pittsburgh district. I talked to the congressman in this district. And I talked to all the people in the community, and my project was directed by the people in that community who told me who I should talk to and suggested the part that each person's story would play in giving a full picture. And I set out to do a piece without any narration because these stories are so strong. But yet and all, in the final making of the program, there had to be some narration to kind of set the scene, but we tried to keep it to that. I collaborated in this project with Hugh Rogers, a very dear friend of mine and a local attorney, so he was a big help in clarifying some of the legal issues in this story. But we're only going to hear the first 10 minutes now, so you'll have to wonder about the rest of it. You find out that this house that was bulldozed down and pushed down in the basement, is located about 8 miles from the place where the lake is being built. And that you'll find out that the actual lake area is 3,400 acres, but that they took 20,000 acres for this project and more, nearly 21,000. And you also find out how the congressional leaders manipulated the law, changed the laws, grandfathered things in, anything. This dam acquired a life of its own and has not yet been stopped. So this is the stuff that the fabric of our life here. It's good material for songs. You can write a lot of songs about this kind of thing. And I used to write a lot. I haven't written songs for a long time. But
who did the song? What's the song?
The song is a takeoff on the Aragon Mill by Cy Kong. I just rearranged the song to fit this story.
Basically, the legal changes that the government went through were just converting all the land to public domain land.
Yeah. Okay. And then they were able to condemn it all.
That's what I mean. Yeah, but that has to be public domain.
So why don't we sing the original song that's derived from? This is the kind of a festival where you could be singing a song like this, and the guy that wrote it might walk through the door. At the east end of town, at the foot of the hill, stands a chimney so tall, it's called the Aragon Mill. But there's no smoke at all coming out of the stack. The mill has pulled out and it ain't coming back. Children at all in the narrow empty street. The looms are all gone, but it's so quiet I can't sleep. And the only tune I hear is the sound of the wind as it blows through the town. Weave and spin, weave and spin. Thank you. Did anybody look to see what the title of this workshop is? Because nobody told me. Oh, mining songs. I am sorry about that.
You don't care what they're called.
I am sorry about that. No, it's important to have these categories, don't you think? We get the mining songs over here, right where we want them, and all these other things. Picked up a shovel and I walked through the mines. I loaded 16 tons of number 9 coal. The shop boss said, well, bless my soul, you know, 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. I was born one morning, it was drizzling rain. Fighting in trouble at my middle name. That song to kids in the schools, and then they want to know what the company store is, and I tell them to go home and ask their grandparents what the company store is, and then the next week when I come back, we have a long talk about what the company store was. And one kid even brought in some script one time. Yeah, so you can get just plant a little idea and then get people doing their own research on it. Learning their own family's version of all these different stories. Maybe I'll try a Hazel Dickens song. I haven't sung this week completely. He's a poor man, his mind's all he's known. And miners don't get rich loading coal. He's a sick man, cause that coal dust took its stand. And he don't expect to get no help from that operator's man. So it's goodbye, old timer. Guess our time has come. But thank you. anybody have a coal mining song they'd like to hear? I might not know it.
Coniconius.
What's that?
Coniconius.
Oh.
Black Bumblebee.
I never could get Nimrod to sing this one all week. He might have sung it when I wasn't around, but I didn't get to hear him do it. So this is a combination of my version and his version. This song was written by a fellow by the name of Mike Paxton, who was a DJ on a little radio station in Pikeville, Kentucky back in the late 60s. And it was recorded by the Goins brothers, and Rich Kirby heard it and taught it to me. And then I went up to see Nim and I sang it to him, and he learned it, and then he made up his own version of it. And now I sing it the way that, the combination of the way he did it, and not the way I used to do it. When I get up to heaven, I'm gonna hug St. Peter's neck. Then he'll run and tell Paul and Silas to send me my black lung check. Do call me, call me osos, and the black lung too. You get the one, you get the other, either way you lose. I went to see my doctor, cause I couldn't get my breath. He said, boy, you got some drug, well, mean you're dead. You call me, call me osos, black lung blue. You get the one, you get the other, either way blue. I'll tell nobody nothing, I'll just keep working on. The kids need all their schooling before they're gone. Come, corny osos, black, long, blue. You get the one, you get the other, either way blue. When I get up to heaven, I'm gonna hug St. Peter's neck. He'll run Paul's house, then be my black lung check. Call me Coney Osas, black lung blue. You get the one, you get the other, either way you do. When I get up to heaven, St. Peter's gonna cry. When I tell him the reason this poor boy had to die. Call me Coney Osas, black lung blue. You get the one, you get the other, either way. Black lung blues, I lay down and pick the trouble loose. Black lung blues, the corner corny was us. Black lung blues. You get the one, you get the other, either way you blue. Yeah. Of course, the song pokes a lot of fun at the word, pneumoconiosis, because suddenly, after 1968 in the UMW Wildcat strike in West Virginia, when 40,000 miners went out for a month, and finally the legislators said, oh yeah, well, maybe we better get a black lung law. Finally, after that, thousands of men discovered they were dying of something they couldn't pronounce. And so the word, this song kind of pokes fun at this ridiculous word, although it's a, God knows it's a tough way to go. He's had more hard luck than most men could stand. The mines was his first love, but never his friend. He's lived a hard life, and hard he will die. Black lungs done got him, his time it is nigh. A black lung, you're just abiding your time. Well, in soon all this suffering I'll leave behind. But I can't help but wonder what God had in mind to send such a devil to claim this soul of mine. He went to the boss man, but he slammed the door. Well, it seems you're not wanted when you're sick and you're poor. You're not even covered on their bed legal plans, and your living depends on the favors of men. Down in the poorhouse on starvation's plan, where pride is a stranger and doomed is a man, his soul choked with coal dust till his body's decayed, and everyone but Black Lung done turn him away. Black Lung, ah, your hands icy cold, as you reach for my life and you torture my soul. Cold dust and water holes down in that dark cave, where I spent my life's blood digging my own grave. Down at the graveyard, the boss man, he came with his little bunch of flowers. Dear God, what a shame. Oh, take back your flowers, don't you sing no sad song. The die has been cast now, and a good man is gone. That's Hazel's song, Hazel Dickens' song, of course. Yeah.
I just wanted to have a little footnote in there, which is that there are still doctors writing in these so-called scholarly journals denying such thing as black lung and saying that that miners died because they smoked too much. 1 year ago, there was an article, you know, 30.
Who's that guy up in Morgantown that keeps coming out with those things?
Yeah.
Can't think of his name.
Yeah. He was
it's always been open season on coal miners, you know. It's always been open season on them.
But they're still writing. They're still trying to say.
Well, I'd like to sing a few more of them here.
Sure, go ahead. Yeah.
Here's a Gene Ritchie song that I tacked the final verse onto. I was living in Knoxville, Tennessee when Jockey Blonsky was murdered. And I threw up all over the kitchen when I heard it on the radio that morning. I was physically, you know, just like somebody punched me in the stomach. I'd heard him speak 3 weeks before that in Beckley at the high school to a rally involving thousands of miners. And the election had been, or he had contested the election, and the Labor Department had agreed to investigate. Although the government refused to assign personal protection to him. So I heard him speak, I think, on the 19th of December that year, and then he was executed probably sometime around New Year's Eve. And I've been singing this song of Gene's already, and when I heard the news, I sat down and I wrote another verse of this song, which Gene feels really changes the character of the song, and she doesn't like it very much. She likes it more in its original form. But I think you do what you have to do with these songs, you know. And this has got a good singing chorus on it now. I remember the ways in the bygone days when we all was in our prime, when me and John L. gave the old man hell down in the Blue Diamond Mine, when the whistle blowed and the rooster crowed 2 hours before daylight, when a man done his best and he earned his good rest. In the Blue Diamond Mines, I worked my life
feel all black old, even got my lungs and your dust and black in my soul. And now I am old, turning your back, where else can a poor miner go? Well, it's Algoma Bluff and it's big leather wood.
These were the songs that Jerry Mills and I took with us up when we were invited to come up to the sing at the Black Lung Rally in Washington, D.C., right outside the United Mine Workers headquarters on 15th Street. And there were 7,000 miners and their spouses there. You have to say spouses now, you can't just say wives anymore, because it's gotten complicated by the fact that women have the past 10, 12 years have been actively working in the mines now. A woman coal miner got shot at and had her hand all blown apart the night that I went down to visit Rocky. And Rocky Peck lives in Mingo County in West Virginia, but over on the other side, I was over there the next day over around a little place called Canada, Kentucky. And at 3:30 in the morning, while I was sleeping at Rocky's house, a woman was standing picket duty, a woman coal miner, mother of two children, and somebody drove by and shot at her, opened up with a buckshot, and blew her hand all to pieces. And so I think one thing we could do. You wonder, what can I do about a woman getting her hand shot up? I always think maybe what we can do is to start drawing a little more fire ourselves. And that maybe if we draw some fire ourselves in our own lives, working in our own situations, if we start to draw some fire, it'll ease up some of the pressure down at that end. Right now, every state police practically in the state, both states of Kentucky and West Virginia, is on patrol now. You know, they've really got all their eggs in one basket. And maybe you live in Boston, or maybe you live in Georgia or somewhere else. Well, there's plenty of stuff there too, that, like the Stonewall Jackson Dam, or anything that you can think of to begin to draw a little fire. And it's all wonderful stuff to look at and to study and to think about. You could do a lot of creative things with it, like radio work, or writing articles for magazines, or talking in your local groups at home about what you've seen here and how that reflects in your mind on stuff that's going on right around home. And start to draw a little fire yourselves. Kick up some sand with the school boards this year. Let's take some of this repressiveness, some of this right-wing stuff out of our schools if we can, you know, to keep pressure on school boards. In communities, let's try to if we sing, let's be singing concerts to raise money for shelters for women in our own communities. And draw some fire that way. However you can think of to do it usefully and creatively in a way that fulfills you, that doesn't compromise you, that doesn't make you feel bad about yourself, but makes you feel good about yourself. As you can see, I think you can see from evidence this week, these young coal miners who are here, the older coal miner, Nimrod Workman, those people, they all feel good about what they're doing. They all feel good about themselves. Their lives are full of a lot of hardship, but it doesn't alter the fact that their commitments have fulfilled them in ways that maybe, even though we might live in more successful circumstances, knowing a commitment like that, clinging to an image like a perfect union, which is what I know these guys are thinking about. These things add a lot of zest to life, a lot of fun to life. It's fun working with your friends. It's fun putting these festivals together. It's fun. I buzz around all year talking to people, trying to figure out how to program this thing, trying to do something that's going to buzz a little bit when it happens. And I think you can bring joy to your work, but I think you can apply more heat wherever you are to the situations around you. Start drawing a little of that fire if you can. Be a subject for a good song too, if anybody can think of a song.
Michael, up on our farm, where the Massachusetts, you know, New York, New Hampshire, the unions are getting awful bad mails. And people are now once again wondering whether they are really and truly needed. And yet here this weekend, it was brought back to me very strongly that they are terribly important to take care of. Why do you think that the larger unions have really designated themselves by their skullduggery and pride within their members, and yet the coal mining unions seem to be honestly trying to do a good job for their members? How the difference?
The coal miners union has an absolutely wretched history. It is currently being led by a young and energetic man whom a lot of people believe in, and who I think is facing tremendous difficulty in mapping out a course for himself for the union. This strike is complex. I mean, most Americans who even hear about the strikes dismiss it, and they say those miners want more money. This has nothing to do with wages. Nothing at all whatsoever to do with wages. It has to do with the ability of a major corporation to back out on contracts that made with, as an acting member of the BOAC, to then pull out of that arrangement and say, well, we're just going to run a scab shop now. And if one can do it, they can all do it. And that's why this particular strike is so terribly crucial. It has nothing to do with wages and working conditions. It has to do with a way of life, a whole way of life being.
And another thing I think we have to realize is that a lot of the mainstream unions managed to achieve their primary goals. The mine workers union has, through all these struggles, not generally managed to achieve its primary goals, and so they haven't been put in the position of being complacent and going on to other things and outside issues. They still have all their central issues to deal with, their life and death issues, where a lot of the unions that we talk about since they achieved their main goals, have frittered away a lot of their original purpose on outside things.
But I think part of the answer to your question lies with us, too.
Yes.
With us, too. You see, I think when people have a good, strong self-image, they don't want to be run around by corrupt governments. And I think this country as a whole is suffering from a lack of a strong personal self-image. And I think that that's been particularly true of the situation here in the Appalachian region, where, as you know, for many years, the general culture here has been the object of derision. Has been pictured on major media productions as being ridiculous, full of stupid, inbred, immoral, and not useful or important people. Things like the Beverly Hillbillies, all the Al Cap stuff, the Petticoat Junction, even the Waltons is a terrible myth maker. The trouble with this kind of imagery is that in time, the people who it's aimed at even come to believe it, I think. In a society where the average student watches 18,000 hours of television by the time he graduates from high school, you come to believe that stuff about yourself, and the reinforcement that people get from educational experiences here in the state tends to reinforce that. The schools are saying, this imagery has no place in the classroom. This old language is substandard, it's incorrect. When you start looking at the old language, of course, that these old people are still talking around here, you can find, if you trace it back, that most of it was historically correct at another time. It's a kind of an echo from another time. And so that's why festivals, that's why radio programs, that's why getting all this stuff out, as Hollis says, throw it up, man, and see where it comes down. Yeah.
I've often heard that since Sam Gompa's day, way back in the 20s and 30s, that unions, major unions, have evolved into big business just like any other corporation. What's your feeling about that? The corruptness has come in because of that. I don't know. I'm just.
Well, the miners' union certainly had its periods of unresponsiveness, of inaccessibility to the average rank and file worker, of top-downism, of boardroom dealings, all of that. The United Mine Workers has, as I say, a terrible history of that, and that's in books. And that's, you can go read about that, or you can talk to scholars of labor history, which I am not. But I think now, with the defeat of Tony Boyle and the growth of the last few years, very stormy growth, nothing nice and easy about it at all, but I think now, especially with this strike, there's a real prize for people to have their eye on.
But unionism as an entity, as an organizational entity unto itself, do you think that in the last 30, 40 years, it has gone in the direction of big business? Not just the mine workers. I mean,
well, I think unions have suffered from the same kind of myth making that all these other things have, and so I think they've gotten a very bad name, and in many cases, it's well deserved. But it's still, as Maggie pointed out, it's an ideal, yeah. Working in our own communities, working in our own families, for God's sake, for Christ's sake.
United Nations, for God's sake.
You know, those are all areas where I think you can, this vision of a union, this vision of people who can work in harmony across all these different lines, We had a wonderful Irish week here this summer, a very political one, when all of the performers were consumed with what's going on in Ireland now and talked about it and showed how their music was an outgrowth of what's happening in Ireland today. It was a wonderful, wonderful week. And here we just finished a Scottish week, and the Voice of America has suggested that I put together a troupe of Appalachian musicians and storytellers and dancers to go to tour in Greece and Yugoslavia in the coming year, and to identify folk musicians and then bring them back over here for an Augusta Greek week next year. It may be the year after, but I don't know how fast all of this can turn. But these things that we're doing here today, you know, can apply internationally. They can apply worldwide. They can cut across all cultural lines, all racial lines, you know, and they can get at it in a more people-to-people way. I think we can start to establish communication with communities all over the world, and to look to those communities for examples of how to solve problems and how to come closer to living the kind of lives we envision for ourselves. Can I sing West Virginia My Home?
Go ahead,
everybody
do it.
Do that.
Go ahead.
West Virginia. Thank you.
remind everybody that the film And the Heavens Weep is going to be shown at 6 o'clock in the choir room. That's underneath the dining room at Benedum.
What?
And the Heavens Weep, the coal mining film in West Virginia, 1930s. 6 p.m.
What I'll do is just walk into the library.